Welcome to Influential Visions. Here we interview futuristic leaders who share their deep industry knowledge and business experience with you, ensuring you have your finger on the pulse and your eyes wide open. Here is your host, Nathaniel Schuller.
Well, I am privileged today to be joined by Bill Nussey from Freeing Energy. And thank you, Bill, for joining me. I really appreciate it very much.
I'm excited to be here, Nat. Thank you for inviting me.
Yeah, it's amazing how many amazing people we have in our networks. And, you know, you kindly sent me your book. Wow, it's got to be eight or nine months ago now. And I read it on an airplane. And there was so much information in there about energy, the current energy crisis that we're sort of edging towards, or we're actually in. I mean, where I live in Croatia, there is, you know, the government kind of have capped the increase that energy companies can charge. And, you know, that's been very, very good for everybody. But a lot of countries where it's privatized, like, for example, in the UK, it's just insane for normal people. So how did you end up in Freeing Energy, Bill? And you know, where did you sort of come from to launch this this venture?
Well, there's two things about my story that plays out over and over again that landed me here. Is I'm a serious nerd and I love disruptions. So I've been starting businesses since I was in high school in the US, and sold several companies, took one public, got to press the button on NASDAQ, created a unicorn as a CEO. And my last business I sold to IBM, and I wrote a letter to the CEO of IBM complaining about how they should run their business better. But I turned it into a nice, here's what IBM could be. And I ran strategy, ended up getting invited to run strategy for IBM, which was really cool. And while I was there, one of the projects we worked on was about clean energy and the energy transition and the coming issues with fossil fuels. And I realized that one of the most important fundamental industries in the world was about to be disrupted. And so we knew that change was coming. I think the speed with which it's coming, and frankly, the urgency that's driving it, was unseen. But we are in a place where we knew we'd have to be. And the book is really about what entrepreneurs and early stage investors can do to participate and really help this exciting transition, this terrifying and exciting transition happen, and build great businesses around it. And I think it's also helpful to very large companies that are trying to navigate this as well. And how do you think about this, not just from saving the planet, not just from creating stability, but how do you think about this from creating great business? And that's really the punchline of my work and Freeing Energy.
Right, right. And you know, from what I sort of gathered from the book, we are in a very big crisis, really, especially with all the number of outages that have kind of occurred, certainly in North America, in a lot of countries where there are hurricanes and things like that. And it really inspired me to sort of hear the story about the people in, it's not Costa Rica, Puerto Rico, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yes, where they have these microgrids, which can power, you know, whole schools. And I found that particularly inspiring, to be honest.
Thanks. It was amazing to me to learn that you can take off-the-shelf components that everyone knows exist everywhere, and panels and inverters, and put them together with batteries. And in a place like Puerto Rico, you can actually build that system which will power parts of a school or any building and actually be less expensive than buying power from the grid. And simultaneously addressing the issues with Puerto Rico in particular, their grid is very unstable. And it has, not just when hurricanes hit, but the grid breaks all the time. And it's not often any time in tech history where I've spent my career there, where you have a better product at a better price that every single customer prefers. And part of my mission is to get the story out there. This stuff's real. You can debate environmentalism. You can debate climate change. These are all now secondary topics. The primary topic is you can save money. You can improve the reliability of your home and business. And by the way, you can help the planet and help make a positive social impact. But this is a business discussion going forward. And that's the part that most people still struggle to see.
Right. I mean, from what I also gathered from your book is that the grids that that people are using for electricity in most part are based upon Edison's 120-year-old grid, which that totally shocked, it completely shocked me. I literally listened to that and my mouth was open and I was like, are you kidding me? And there's a picture in your book, which really set it in my mind, of this ancient old piece of technology. And frankly, it disturbed me that, you know, the companies now are using this narrative that they need to make a profit so they can reinvest the money. And tell this to the people in England, in the UK and elsewhere who are struggling to eat and have to go to food banks. You know, tell it to them and see what they have to say, when energy companies have made billions and billions more than they did in the past few years. And that just, it just shocks me, the whole concept of this energy crisis and the way that it's being handled certainly in Europe is really shocking. And I know we've got factors. I know we've got this awful situation with Russia and Ukraine, this awful war that's going on, that's affecting the price of gas, of oil. But it's, I don't know. I just found it so surprising when I saw that, you know, we've got all these options. We've got oil, diesel, you know, nuclear, solar, wind, hydropower, coal, biomass, and all of these things. But actually, from reading your book, I kind of realized that, hold on a minute, why aren't I generating my own electricity?
Exactly. And the exciting part is you can list all of those energy generation systems and traditional ones and transitional ones like nuclear. But the math is actually really clear. It's the policymakers that get it confused. But solar and wind are the only sources of energy that are getting substantially less expensive over time. And I think once the people who are in power making policy decisions, thinking about the long-term stability and cost of the electric grid, I think the inevitable outcome will be that they'll move towards the cheapest, most reliable, and least likely to go up and down like the folks in the UK are seeing, which is solar. And there are many different paths there. And my book talks about the small scale stuff, which is where I think the biggest opportunity for innovators and entrepreneurs is. But I think broadly, solar with some degree of wind and a little bit of nuclear to backstop it is it's hard to argue there's a different future. And the only reason that the price of electricity in the UK is going up so much is that everyone knew that the dependence on natural gas and fossil fuels from foreign countries was going to create an issue. This is the inevitable consequence. It shouldn't, I don't mean to sound snarky, but it shouldn't be surprising. We balance the world's fossil fuel prices on a knife's edge. And when Russia decides that they want to be bigger, then the whole world goes topsy-turvy. Now, guess what? If the UK had the majority of their electricity provided from solar and particularly wind, there's a lot of wind available, this wouldn't be happening. So this is the consequence of a multinational fossil fuel supply chain. And if there's a good silver lining, as we say, it's that this is, everybody involved is going to push towards renewables, and not because they're trying to save the climate, not because it's even cheaper, which it is. They're just, renewables have another great characteristic, which is their prices are stable. That alone is going to push Europe to embrace renewables faster than they ever imagined.
Wow. It's something, you know, people a few years ago were so excited about the solar panels. And here in Croatia, people are kind of very slow to embrace this. And I think it's like a lot of countries, the government slows these things down because there are, in many places, I would say, I'm not going to say collaborations, but I'm going to say there are reasons that governments don't push this legislation through, which allows smoother adoption of these sorts of electricity methods. Would you agree with that?
I think you could answer that by saying that the largest industry in the world on every country is energy. And it's not just an enormous industry. it's also fundamental to the way societies operate. And upsetting that industry is politically dicey. And in fact, worse than that, if we push it too far and too fast, which a lot of advocates would like to see, it's moving way too slow, but they'd like to see it way too fast. But the disruption means that we could actually see our energy systems, which are generally very stable, even with price hikes in the UK aside, they're still very stable. You could see actual instability, which would be tectonic shifts in the world economy. So I think that we could move much more quickly, but governments are remiss to do it for a whole host of reasons. One, because it works, they don't want to mess with it. Two, because the energy industry and the electricity and hydrocarbons in governments are so intertwined. I've interviewed over 400 people when I wrote this book, a lot of them in electric utilities, in oil and gas companies, and in governments. And it's easy to paint this as sort of nefarious behind the scenes, people doing, I don't know. I certainly didn't see any of that. I'm sure it exists. I'm not naive, but I think everybody that I talked to had a credible story. They want to do the right thing. And this is a whole new system, solar, wind, batteries. This is a brand new idea. What if it doesn't work? How do we go back? So I think that some of this is just genuine caution, but I am ultimately a capitalist, and energy is one of the most capital intensive industries in the world. And as a result, whether the policymakers embrace it or resist it, it is an inevitability. It is happening. And the Ukraine Russia war is just, especially across Europe, is opening eyes that we need to get onto this transition now. We're not going to wait another 10 years. And it's happening.
Right, right. I understand that completely, because it's like any new adoption. If it's rushed too fast, it could literally destroy a lot of things. So in terms of the power companies themselves adopting this, have you seen much adoption when it comes to them actually signing up to solar, or is this really for sort of people like me or and you who get solar panels and then sell the electricity back to the grid ourselves or direct to people?
There's a story in my book that's a true story, but the person I interviewed was unnamed, and it was a large electric utility, and the executive said to me, listen, we love solar and wind. They are actually cheaper than any other way we generate electricity, and we are embracing them as quickly as we can do it safely. I think other people could say they could do it faster, but from their view, they're doing it as quickly as they feel comfortable. He said, I'm a dollars and cents kind of person. I don't think it's wise for us to be thinking about putting it on rooftops. He said, it's very simple. It costs one half to one third for us to build out a large scale solar and wind plant than it does to put solar panels on a roof. And so I let it hang there for a moment. And I came back and said, it's cheaper for you. And he you could tell his gears were turning. I said, so if you put up a 100 megawatt solar plant, say 50 miles outside the city I live in, and you turn it on, will my electricity bill go down the next minute? And he goes, well no, it's a complex. Okay, that's all right, fine. I get it. But over time, you'll be more profitable, I thought to myself. But if I put solar panels on my roof and I turn them on, my electricity bill goes down that second. So from my point of view, solar is actually cheap. Small scale solar is actually cheaper for me. And last I checked, I am the customer. And so there's this disconnect, even from people that want to see these small scale solar systems get deployed. They confuse the math and think that building a large scale solar plant outside of a city is in the same market. It has the same apples to apples economic comparisons as putting it on the roof. And in fact, they're entirely unrelated markets. And that's the reality that ultimately consumers, people that own homes or buildings or live in apartments and apartment owners, the economics of this are going to become irresistible and the policymakers will follow. There's a great story that I found in my research back many years ago. AT&T, which was the monopoly telephone company in the U.S., they had every telephone connection, every long distance phone call was owned and controlled by AT&T, and no one was allowed to do it. And the government granted them, like they do for electric utilities, a monopoly free from competition. But the new technologies like the internet were ready to go, and AT&T was resisting it. And so the CEO of AT&T gave a famous speech, and he said to the audience at a university, listen, if we allow competition in the telephone system, The cost of long distance phone calls will, the supporting the network will be fewer and fewer people will be paying AT&T, but we own the network. And so the cost will go up for everybody else, and the cost will actually go up just to keep the network in place. And the cost will be most egregious on those families that are least able to afford it. In other words, if all the wealthy people buy alternatives to AT&T long distance, the network costs remain the same. Therefore, we got to raise the costs on low-income families. And that is the exact same argument that electric utilities make today. That if we let people put solar panels on the roof, then the cost of the network remains the same. The cost of the grid remains the same. So we're going to have to push the cost up for low-income families. And this is the reason, the singular reason that you see legislators embracing the argument to slow roll local energy is what I call it. Well, guess what happened with AT&T? This crazy thing, once they got out of the monopoly position, this crazy, like, silly idea happened. It was called innovation. And a bunch of crazy entrepreneurs in garages in Silicon Valley and across the United States came up with new things like, well, wait a minute, what if we sent voice over the internet? And you fast forward to 20 years later and we're making phone calls. You and I are having a phone call. I don't even have to care where you are. We're having a video call across the planet Earth with no latency. It costs us nothing to do it. And I think anyone who understands the history of business would agree that had AT&T maintained that monopoly, not only would long distance prices continue to go up, we would certainly not have long distance isn't even a cost, zero, and we can do video all at the same time. So innovation emerges when monopolies are modified. There's a reason to have AT&T and our utilities own the grid. So let's not begrudge them that. But we don't have to have quite as tight a monopoly, and innovation will happen. And I believe electricity will see similar levels of innovation, maybe not price drops, but similar levels of innovation that telecom has had that allows you and I to have this discussion today.
Wow. So in what about green building then? And how, you know, do you think people are sort of a bit wasteful when it comes to their energy, or do you think that that's not really relevant? Because I know things need to be a lot more, you know, people need more insulation. They need to, you know, do sorts of things like that, so then they can retain the heat for longer and this sort of stuff. Do you think green energy is an important part of this sort of conversation? Green building, sorry.
Very much so. It's all of the above, and efficiency is often the least expensive, longest term way to reduce your energy bills. You still need to generate it, but hopefully you can generate less. And for many homes, at least in the United States, where we've got sort of infamously large numbers of large homes and cul-de-sacs, even if you don't have an enormous roof, there is usually a crossover section. If you add enough insulation, better windows, that you can generate all the electricity you need from solar panels on the average size American home. But if you have a wildly inefficient or old home, your windows are single pane, you don't have, your doors are leaky, then you just can't generate enough electricity to power your air conditioning or your heating. And you have to go back to the grid, which is just wasteful. So the cheapest first step, and I say this in my book, is to get rid of the obvious inefficiencies in your home. And that after that, self-generation, on-site energy, local energy, whatever you call it, starts to make a lot of economic sense.
Right, right. And that also counts for business and industrial buildings as well, right? Is it a similar kind
doubly
of
so.
Thing?
Doubly so, right. Yes, absolutely. Right. Most businesses don't look at their electricity bills. And in many cases, in my experience, the electricity bill is so complex in the way that it's calculated that businesses just throw their hands up and say, I can't even possibly navigate this. There's a whole industry that emerged even before self-generation, before local energy was feasible, that would help you navigate and reduce those costs. But now with technology and local generation, the opportunities to be smart about how your building consumes electricity, to be smart about how your building uses the energy it's consuming better, the opportunities to save here are just enormous. And I'm one of the things, the main thing that I spend my day on is a venture investor. And we are looking at many companies that are covering that entire gamut of buildings. We love the what the industry calls a commercial and industrial space, because these people are very smart. They spend a lot of money. You can give them an ROI very easily, a dozen different ways. And so that's a really exciting place. This area you're asking about, Nat, this is the most interesting space for the clean transition that I can think of right now.
Wow. Wow. Well, thank you, Bill. I've learned a lot, and I know people would probably love to connect with you. And certainly, I recommend that if you're listening to this, you should definitely read Freeing Energy and check out Bill if you want sort of more information. And I really, really appreciate it.
Thank you. It's a pleasure. I really have enjoyed it. And thank you for having me.
Thanks ever so much. Cheers.
Thanks very much for listening to Influential Visions. Please make sure you share this episode with your friends and business connections. And don't forget to drop us a review wherever you listen. Thanks.